So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast that loves to spin on its own fluids.
That's a reference to Daniel Ricciardo farting in the press conference.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the boom shakalaka vamos, vamos, vamos of F1 podcasts.
You came fourth, mate. It's not that big a deal.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the podcast that took hashtag Kimi7 out and then went into hashtag Seb5.
Oh, Ferrari, you...
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the podcast that honestly was going to get a podium.
Chinny Recon.
I'm T Grez, and today from Matt's house in London, we are going to talk about the high level of entertainment value, the 2017 Singapore Grand Prix. It was the first ever wet night race. It was the most exciting race of the last year. We had 8 retirements, a damp track, and I think that everyone finished was pretty chuffed with their result. But first, we're going to talk about McLaren's future, Toro Rosso's demise, and crashes. That's all to come. Joining me is a motoring journalist who is conspicuously absent again. It is Phil Tromans.
Hello, everyone. Yes, Chica and Terry, if you look very closely, you'll notice that I'm not actually sat with you this evening.
Hmm? I hadn't actually noticed. That's embarrassing.
No, I'm in a hotel room again in Berlin, driving a new Kia.
In the hotel room?
Yes. It's a very small
it's
Kia.
It's so small.
Wow.
Yeah, what's it like?
It's called the Stonic.
Stonic the Hedgehog.
Stonic the Hedgehog. Yes, that's right. That is literally the same joke I've made and I'm going to say in my video review tomorrow. So sorry, you're a bit slow on that one.
Phil, shall we post your video review on our Facebook page? You can get an extra few views.
Yeah, we could use a few more views.
It will mean unleashing our followers' comments.
To be honest, the comments we get already are pretty goddamn awful.
And alongside me is a man who thinks he's got gout. It's Terry Saunders.
I have had the kind of week that I can only imagine Peter Ustinov had in his dying years. I feel like I've had so many things to go to, and I've eaten out all the time, and I've drunk a lot, and now I'm ill, and I think I might have gout. I don't know what gout is, but I think I've got it.
It sounds like you've got a life.
Have you become a bon viveur?
I have become bon viveur. Huh? Chica, what have you been up to?
I've been to a wedding.
Ooh.
But I can't really tell you anything about that, I'm afraid.
Why?
It's top secret.
Okay, we're going to pause the recording. Chica's going to tell us the story, and then our reaction will suffice. It's going to be like 2 girls, 1 cup.
It's not going to be like that.
Pause. Play. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God.
You've gone down in my estimation.
What is wrong with you?
Wow. Now the nickname makes sense.
Okay, so now time for Listener's Corner. Is this the most news we've had in a single week? Even before the carnage of Singapore, the pit lane was ravaged by changes in teams and engine suppliers. We turn to you guys to decide what we should be focusing on. Now we're going to start with the unpredictable race in Singapore, which was likely the ruin of all fantasy Grand Prix teams.
Wasn't a good one.
How'd you do?
I had badly. I had Vettel, Raikkonen, and Verstappen, and Alonso, and Palmer for a joke. So we did quite well.
I had Kvyat and Vettel and Verstappen, I think.
Oh,
so,
dear.
Yeah, didn't go well.
Daniel Siebergsen said, didn't bother to watch the race after the first lap. This was the season's anticlimax. The tree hugger got this for free.
So the tree hugger, by that he means Hamilton, because he's eschewed his own name and gone vegan.
Good one.
Thanks. But he did get this for free, but that's not a bad thing.
Also, I don't think it was an anticlimax. I thought it was quite an entertaining race.
Absolutely. And I think he deserved to win after all that.
I think he was in with a pretty good shout once he realised it was raining, because whatever you think of Hamilton, you can't realistically deny that he's phenomenal in the wet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he was looking good. And especially once Ricciardo started having problems later as well. But yeah, it was definitely helped by the fact that he didn't have to get past the Ferraris.
Let's not forget, this is a race that Ferrari threw into the bin. And if someone throws something into the bin, Lewis comes out and fishes it out like a tramp, is what I'm saying. He is.
So what you're saying is Hamilton's going through the bins.
He's a freegan. He goes into bins and gets free race victories that other people have thrown away.
Daniel Forster said, Jocelyn in sixth. Given only 11 cars finished, he still managed to be in the second half of the result. Still, as a certain commentator used to say, to finish first, first you must finish. Not that Palmer's ever going to finish first.
Well, technically he did.
He finished.
Oh, yes, he did.
Quite well.
He technically won for a second.
No, he was in second for a second, wasn't
he?
No,
there's a problem on his transponder, which we talked about last week, which I can't
believe.
Still,
it's like a third race.
Yeah.
For about three races, he just disappears off the listings sporadically.
And then pops up in the wrong place.
And when the race finished, they put up the official classification, and they put him as a winner, and then Harris in second. So technically, and there was some talk about, technically, does that mean he's officially won? Because it's not who crosses the line who wins the race. Mm-hmm. It's who the FIA say in their documents has won the race. So technically, he won.
He won. Wow.
Amazing. I think we've always loved him.
Big fan, big fan.
Mike Evans said, please, can you talk about how amazing Palmer is and how we've all made a huge mistake?
Yeah, we're going to have to get some new T-shirts done, I think.
What is wrong with you two?
I'm not wrong. I've never said that Palmer's not a good driver.
You've
He's an all-round
slagged
nice
him
guy.
Off every single episode.
This sixth place finish, coming home sixth in a race where to get points, you just have to not have been walloped into a wall. And it's not really about skill, it's just about avoiding debris. And he avoided debris very well. His teammate in the identical car was doing much better than him. And that's really a true testament to Palmer's skills.
Mm-hmm.
Did he? I didn't actually see anything from him at the end of the race. Did he say, yeah, I'm pleased I did really well? Or did he say it was all thanks to the team in the car, like he does when things go wrong?
Oh, no, he was pleased himself.
He was just covering up his erection in his race suit. Just like, I can't believe it. Me and my dad are going to have a party now. Ugh.
That's horrible.
That wasn't what I meant, but it stands.
So to speak.
Simon said, Ricardo has his shoe thing. Vettel has his finger thing. But what would Palmer's thing be if he won? I assume making it rain 50 quid notes.
I think if Palmer actually won a race, he would be on the podium interview with Eddie Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just go, fuck you all. I'm fucking amazing. My dad was right. You're all wrong. How fucking dare you doubt me? I am the best. And he'd probably just strip naked and start masturbating.
That wouldn't be champagne flying over the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the other drivers would just back away and there'd just be this lingering close-up on him, because they'd have to go away from his face. From his penis. So they'd go up to his face and there'd be this lingering thing of just his sinewed, stretched face as he masturbates furiously into the champagne bottle. And like they'd keep on it for a really long time, and then he'd kind of come down and the whole paddock would be empty. And he'd be like, guys, and it was just his dad there with his arms crossed going, you shouldn't have done that, boy.
Wow. And that's a new T-shirt.
Stephen Jones said, the sight of Magnussen elbowing his way around the track was topped only by seeing the reaction on Arvid Bane's face as he watched his boys try and spit roast Matt 160 miles per hour.
Well, Magnussen was good and shit at the same time.
Sometimes at the same time.
He was.
Yeah.
You're right. He was good and shit at the same time.
Entertaining, but always kind of like, oh, I'm 13th. So, yeah. Oh, great. Oh.
Yeah. If you watched his driving, he was. He was doing some good overtakes.
He had some good tussles, but then he also made a couple of fuck-ups that sort of put him right back into the same tussle again.
For entertainment value, he was in my top three. Now, away from the track, it's been a week of changes, with McLaren ditching Honda and turning to Renault, who in turn gave Toro Rosso the boot and embraced noble Japanese failure while offering Carlos Sainz to the Renault team as a peace offering. This likely leaves Palmer without a drive in 2018, unless his dad manages to convince Williams to take him. So the McLaren-Honda experiment has officially failed. Rich Johnson says, McLareno?
Well, no, Rich, because that's not how they name teams. There's never been a team that's mashed up the name of... maybe Ferrari
that.
Does.
Yeah,
Ferrari. Is technically Ferrari. So taking the first half of Ferrari and the second half of Ferrari and put it together.
I'd like this to be the start of a new naming convention, though, you know, under the new Liberty era.
Yeah.
I think this could work quite well. I wish I'd thought of some before, but...
Toro Rosso, Toro Rosta.
It'd be Toro Ronda.
Sauberari. Forsades.
Oh, that's good.
Forsades.
That is quite good.
Forsades. I think it'd be sponsored by everyone in the world called Sadie. Hello, we're Forsades. Hi.
Red Boyer.
Hassari. Or they'd be Hassi. Hassari. No, that's petered out.
Chris Burstow said, I would like to be proved wrong, but I can't see that switching to Renault engines is a particular step forward. They've had plenty of outright failures and grid penalties. I can see they didn't have a lot of choice, but I'd have been inclined to stick with Honda and get it to work over the longer term. And Sam Miguel Woolbank said, watch Honda get it right next year now. All of a sudden have 100 horsepower more than a Renault power unit.
Two things. One I'm going to discuss is very fact in the state of F1, but my... headline summary is, don't be bloody stupid. Honda haven't got a chance. Renault is not going to win the championship, but Honda is definitely not going to win the championship. So, yes, McLaren, go to Renault.
Cause, lesser of two evils.
Yeah, it's just embarrassing.
Lastly, from Listener's Corner, Jack Nichols said, when do I get to be a friend of the show?
So this is Jack from Radio 5 Live, who does a little podcast called the Checkered Flag Podcast.
Never heard of it.
Some of you, yeah, it's quite a niche one. I think because we've mentioned Jenny Gow a few times after I did a particularly amazing interview with her a while back. If Jenny's a friend of the show, what should we call Jack? He's always been very nice to us.
So you're saying it should be one up from a friend? So maybe boyfriend of the show? We could be going steady with the show. Your friend of mine, we started off as friends, now, you know, he's got to first base. It's Jack Nichols, everybody.
Friends with benefits of the show.
In other news, could Red Bull be on the way out? There are numerous rumours that Dietrich Mateschitz, the boss of Red Bull, is getting bored of F1 and may use the 2021 rule changes as an excuse to bail. Talk around the Austrian team includes a possible move to Honda power in 2019 if Honda get their act together, or the team getting bought out by Porsche in 2021, or Aston Martin.
Well, it does seem like they've got a few too many suitors at the minute. It's, you know, they're not that attractive. I mean, Honda, they might get good, but let's face it, they won't. They've already got a tie-up with Aston Martin, so that makes sense. And the guy from Aston Martin was on the grid at the race saying, in the new rules, we can make a cheap engine and bung it in the car. And then suddenly Porsche saying, we're going to buy a team, maybe they'll buy them. It's exciting.
Do you think maybe they've used all of the marketing potential that they possibly can out of having a team?
Well, it's kind of like, where do they go? I mean, they won, what, 4 world championships on the trot, and now they're not doing quite so well. So, I mean, they're never going to get realistically to those kind of heights again, are they?
Yeah,
not anytime soon.
They've got much better this season.
Well, it's an interesting point. The truth of Formula 1 is teams are cyclical. So you'll have McLaren dominance, Williams dominance, Ferrari, then Red Bull come out of nowhere to be a dominant team for a while. The way it just seems to work is it's just there are years where you're up, years where you're down. And Red Bull aren't a team with a long racing heritage. They're an energy drinks brand that are there as a marketing exercise. I mean, they've already spent a few years on the downturn. Are they prepared to wait until they go up again? or is he just going to bail? And it sounds like he's just bored and going to bail. And if the rumours are true, he'll strike some weird deal where he won't pay anything for years, but Red Bull will still be a massive sponsor. So he'll still be all over the place.
Well, it might be important to point out that this isn't necessarily the team. I mean, we're talking about the team, but it's the title sponsor. I mean, the team may worry, you know, the Milton Keynes team may very well stay in this kind of situation, but just have somebody else's name above the door and a different engine.
Yes, they've got a long heritage of team, haven't they? Because they were Jaguar before that and Stewart before.
Well, they started
that.
Stewart, weren't they? Yeah.
Basically seems that 2021 is going to be a very, very different year.
Ooh.
New rules, all change, everything goes up in the air again.
And it'll be the first year, I think, where Liberty will have really got their ideal show together.
Well, they've got rid of all Bernie's dodgy contract.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll start the countdown to 2021. Now, the last-minute Bottas replacement, Massa, says Williams need to show they want to keep him if he's going to stay.
Williams just replied, who? Oh, that guy. Oh.
He's just filling in a year.
The guy that they only signed because he was literally the only guy they could get at the 11th hour when Bottas decided he was going to Mercedes.
So, that's bear in mind, next year, the rumours for Williams are not Felipe Massa. The rumours are Kubica with one hand, mm-hmm. or, on the other hand, Palmer.
Although apparently Williams have said they're not interested in Palmer.
Well, of course they have, because everyone has to say that as default. Palmer. Can you imagine just being like rumoured to go into a team and then immediately they're going, no.
Well, can you imagine if you're Massa and you're saying, so guys, you're going to sign me for next year? And they go, no, actually, we've decided to go with Julian Palmer.
Oh, that would be the epitome of insult.
Yeah, ouch.
Okay, so what about Alonso? He says he has, on the other hand, options everywhere for 2018. Is that true?
This is true, actually, because I've been looking into this, and obviously he's got the option of staying at McLaren. Mm-hmm. He's got the option of not being at McLaren, maybe going backpacking for a year. He thinks he likes to go to a lot of galleries, or maybe just open a farm. There's options coming out of his ears.
Tell us how wrong we are. You can tweet us at For F1's Sake or find us on Facebook where we're For F1's Sake, or you can email us at wrong@ff1s.com. And now it's time for the teams. We will start with Mercedes. Now, as we said before, Hamilton has become a vegan to save the planet. You wait till you realise how much you fart, Hamilton. You're not doing the ozone layer any good. However, it has paid off because last weekend he went from fifth, held an excellent line when there was absolute carnage around him, and owned the rest of the race. Bottas was good, but home in third, partly due to the fact the Mercedes team had been so busy fussing over Hamilton, they'd forgotten to fill up his water bottle. What did you think of the Mercedes driving, and how long will Hamilton be a vegan for?
He'll be a vegan forever, because Ayrton Senna's telling him to, because he has a connection with the dead man. I mean, that's the problem with Hamilton, isn't it? On one side, he is perhaps the most complete an exciting driver of our times, and on the other side he comes out with stuff going, I knew I was going to win because instead of Toby I was going to win. It's just like, oh, come on, mate.
Thing is when it. He retires, we will look back and be like, imagine having a British driver that good up there. And so I think we should stop taking the absolute piss out of him.
I love him.
And every
I'm a
time
huge
we think
fan.
That,
what's
every
more
time
British than
that,
taking the piss out of him?
No, but every time we think that, then he comes out with something like that. And
I
you're
know.
Like, I can't not take the piss out of you.
I know.
I think that's what makes him a great British champion, is because what is more British than relentlessly taking the piss out of people?
I mean, in that way, Palmer is the epitome of Britishness. I think they should put Palmer on the £10 note.
He's also gloriously shit.
What, Palmer? Yes.
Actually, no, he's not even gloriously shit. He's just shit.
Just shit. I think we should talk about Mercedes were not going to win this race. That was a given.
No, they always said this was going to be one of their hardest races.
Ferrari were quicker in the qualifying. Red Bull were also quicker than Mercedes. I mean, really, realistically, they'd have been happy with fifth place for Hamilton and hoped he could have got maybe one or two places above that. So the fact that they've won the race and Bottas has been disappointedly third, he can't even overtake a broken Red Bull.
Or even he got overtaken by Palmer.
That's going to hurt. Him. You just can't ever get over that.
But there was that bit that the team told Hamilton to back off. Do you remember that?
That was weird.
What was that about?
I think it was some kind of...
It was a strategic thing.
Yeah, some kind of tactics.
Why?
That if there was another safety car, there wouldn't be room for Ricciardo to have a pit stop. I didn't really understand it. To be honest, I was dozing off by that point.
Okay. Yeah. But to be fair, I think Hamilton's was... It was even better because every time he got a bit ahead... And at one point he was 10 seconds ahead. Then safety car brought them all back together. He shouldn't have won that.
To be honest, that the best bit of the race wasn't the carnage at the start, which was amazing, but it was when the safety car came out and it cut to Hamilton moaning about the safety car, having his hands on top of the, not even on the wheel, just like resting on top of the car, like he's just like, you know, driving on a country lane.
That was cool.
Driving, that was pretty cool. Yeah.
Driving gangster style.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Well, I was looking forward once it started to dry out and it became that it clear that it was basically Ricciardo and Hamilton miles away from anyone else. I was looking forward to Ricciardo starting to chase him down because obviously on the rest of the weekend he'd been super quick. But then it turned out that Ricciardo had a problem with his gearbox and that was why he wasn't going very fast.
Yeah, which again makes Bottas look even shitter.
He had no water.
What, Bottas?
Yeah, they forgot to fill up his water bottle.
Well, he could drink his own sweat.
Okay.
We should mention that Bottas has been given a 1-year contract.
Yes.
For next year. Bottas, only 1 year, though.
Bottas has been officially told, you'll do.
To be fair, when they signed him, it was almost definitely going to be for 1 year. So I think he's done well.
He's filled the number two role.
He had a little moment where he looked like he could challenge Hamilton, and now he's been put back in his place.
Yeah.
He won a race.
Oh, yeah.
Ferrari.
Oh, dear.
Right. Race faves Ferrari ended up making the most catastrophic cock-up in the first lap of the race, squashing Verstappen between them. Which Ferrari decided was Verstappen's fault? Was it Vettel's fault? Was it Verstappen's fault?
I'm going to be controversial here and say I don't think it was really anyone. I think the stewards got it right. I mean, I think Vettel was the most in the wrong, but ultimately it was a big accident that just happened.
Yes.
Do you know who was most in the wrong?
Who's most in the wrong?
Ferrari, for tweeting that Verstappen took hashtag Kimi7 out and then he went to hashtag Seb5, hashtag Singapore GP.
That tweet.
I'll get
that
out.
That was amazing. Because one thing that we've not really noticed much this year or discussed much is that Ferrari have banned all of their people from speaking to the media. And you kind of almost don't notice it, but obviously Vettel and Kimi have to do their interviews and stuff like that. But you never interview Arrivabene anymore. There's never any interviews with Ferrari people. They have decided this year to do this kind of crazy, we're going to get down and concentrate on the job and not do any talking to you people. So then when they come out with a tweet like this that just says, oh, by the way, we are right. We're not going to discuss it anymore. We're just going to put a tweet out. And then, like, the follow-up tweet was something like, we were just stating what happened. Oh, God, don't ever go at me. Oh, Mum.
Did they speak to anyone about it?
No, they just don't. They don't.
Oh.
And it's starting to get to the point
cool,
where
is it?
A lot of the journalists and the people covering Formula One are openly sniping about Ferrari because it's bad blood. You know, it's like they can, but and I'm sure Liberty aren't very impressed with them just like deciding not to talk to anyone.
Yeah.
It won't be too long before they do their threaten to go and start up a rival series again, probably.
Can't wait for that one.
But I agree with Terry. I thought it was a racing incident. It was a bit of a silly move from Vettel, but to be honest, in 99 cases out of 100, it would just have been him being Schumacher-esque and cutting Verstappen off. It just so happened that where, you know, Kimi had such a good start that he ended up sandwiching everybody and everyone went into each other.
Should Verstappen have held back a bit?
I don't think he could, really.
I don't think he could. Yeah, I mean, the quickness that it all happened, I mean, you know, why would he?
Because I read quite a few people saying he was aggressive.
What, Verstappen?
Yeah, he was just going forwards.
Aggressive or in trying to overtake people?
Yeah.
I think it's...
I don't know what that means.
I do find it weird, because I've joined a lot of online Formula One groups to try and gauge fan opinion from around the world. And I'm kind of torn, because what's been happening a lot is nearly everyone is trying to apportion blame and say so-and-so should be punished. If they're a Ferrari or a Vettel fan, they're saying it's Verstappen's fault. If they're a Verstappen fan or a Ferrari hater, it's like Vettel should get a race ban, or they're a Hamilton fan. We look back at old races and see these old kind of amazing first lap pile-ups and stuff, and then when one happens in the modern era, everyone goes, oh no, stop this from happening, this can't happen, this is terrible, oh no, I want to blame everyone. It's like, do you know, this was an excellent start to a race that I think should happen more often.
Okay, Red Bull. Now, I'm not going to go on about how sorry I feel for Verstappen because I don't want to have a fight with Terry this evening. But instead, let's talk about the performance of the most popular driver on the grid, Daniel Ricciardo. Excellent drive, not fast enough to challenge Hamilton, but still impressive. How come Red Bull was so much faster than Mercedes in qualifying, but Ricciardo couldn't get anywhere near Hamilton in the race?
Gearbox apparently had a leaky
gearbox problem,
which they didn't talk about at all during the race, which is kind of weird from Red Bull, because you kind of hear from other teams there's something wrong, but Red Bull just keeps shtum And
well, they must have told him over the radio that, you know, because he had to change his settings, which is why he was going so slowly, because they had to sort of, you know, dial everything back so not to overload it. But I presume that, well, it didn't go out in the public feed, but I would have thought, I don't quite know how it works, but don't they have much more go through the public radio than you actually hear on the broadcast?
Yeah, exactly.
You can tune into a special channel or something. I don't know how it works.
It's very confusing, because you think that that would be sort of stuff that you'd other teams you'd hear from. It's very odd that Red Bull can just, and in a weird way, it makes it look, if you're just someone who watches the race and doesn't listen to podcasts and read up about it afterwards, it makes it look as though they were just a bit shit, as opposed to got a problem.
That's why you should listen to this podcast.
Thank you.
Force India. Good result for Perez. Conveniently, turns out he will be staying with Force India next season. And who also did very well out of the lap one crash. However, I don't want to get too emotional over this, but it was little Ocon's 21st birthday in Singapore.
I love Ocon.
He got a point, but he should have got more points. What happened to him? He should have been in the top six and definitely above Palmer.
Definitely agree with all that. This was a classic Force India race of old, in that I didn't notice them for the whole race, and then suddenly there they are in the points.
But Perez did right.
He's a hustler. He did quite well, you know.
We've been saying all season that Perez and Ocon are about the same level.
Yeah, but I think it was a luck thing. Didn't they start on different tyres or something like that? I don't know. Wasn't really paying attention.
Okay.
I think it's interesting that Perez has signed for Force India, because that's a bit of a backwards move, because he was obviously angling to get a bigger drive, and now he's just come out and gone, no, I'm really happy to stay for another year.
Yeah, he's not.
No, he's out.
We all know that.
Where else was he going to go?
Well, that's the question. McLaren.
Well, that's not a step up, though,
no,
is it?
Well, that's the thing. No, is a step up from Force India unless you go to one of the big teams, and they're not going to have him, so he's screwed.
Yeah.
But I like
Ocon. Ocon staying?
He's lovely.
What, Ocon?
Yeah.
He's cute, isn't he? Adorable.
I've got a real soft spot for him. I follow him on Instagram, and he just seems like a nice man.
Williams! Williams have not been great this season, but they should have definitely done better in this absolute shambles of a race. Massa was one of the two drivers that came home without points, and if you look at who did get points, that's frankly embarrassing. Williams were bad from the beginning of practice in Singapore. Why were they so bad?
They've always been a bit rubbish in Singapore. This car is shit, but their car does seem to be especially shit at Singapore.
So Singapore plus Williams equals disaster.
And like, they started Massa on the full wet tyre, definite, and then that was a mistake. And so the whole race, he was just out of sorts.
I thought Stroll actually did rather well, though.
Yeah, he did all right.
Came home in eighth.
Yeah, he was sort of fending off.
He had a lockup,
and Ocon and Van Dorn for a while.
He's turning out to be all right, Stroll.
Okay, Sauber. Lovely Sauber. Every team came home with points in Singapore except Sauber. Somebody give Sauber a cuddle. However, Wehrlein's strategy flaws probably started from the fact he had 6 pit stops during the race. And I'm not really sure what happened to Ericsson, but he crashed under the Anderson Bridge. What will these two do next season? They haven't said yet whether they're staying with Sauber, have they?
No. Well, Ericsson had a weird rumour that he was going to Williams, which I can't imagine for a second, money, but they've already got the money in Stroll. Wehrlein is a bit shit out of luck by the sounds of it, because Sauber's going to be a Ferrari team and Wehrlein's very much a Mercedes driver.
Oh.
Ericsson's probably safe because he's got a lot of money invested in Sauber. And we'll have old Leclerc will be next to him, they reckon. Not confirmed yet, but I think old sexy Pascal is
going to be out.
Going to have a lot of spare time.
What do you think, Phil?
Well, I think if there's going to be a new team, they're going to have Wehrlein and Palmer to choose from.
Ugh.
Wow.
That was appalling for Wehrlein, wasn't it? With hardly anyone finishing, he still came 12th.
But that wasn't he like 3 laps behind everyone
that
or something?
That was his second best finish of 2017.
I know, it's just embarrassing. But Sauber have got old engines and old cars, and the only way they can score on the points is if 10 cars or less finished.
Fewer.
Oh, shut up.
Hayes.
Hey.
I felt sorry for Sauber, but Magnussen won my true pity prize. This will catch on. He was a hero for the first part of the race, and he braved being the first to go onto slick tyres, and it was too early. Grosjean is a mean bully and pushed Magnussen out of 10th, but he did come home with points, although I have no idea how, because every time I looked, he was doing really badly. If it wasn't for engine trouble, tyre mistakes and dickish team members, Hayes could have done pretty well. Yes?
Don't know, yeah, they seem quite exciting, but Gene Haas was quoted in the week saying he's a bit confused at why they're a bit shit. And doesn't I'm kind of paraphrasing that he's a bit that he doesn't know why they're not doing better. They're hiring some more aerodynamicists. The car's not great. Just, it's the same old story every week with us. Whenever we talk about them, we just say, oh, they were good at the start, and then they've got a bit rubbish, and there's nothing more to add.
They gave us some entertainment, at least.
Yeah.
Renault. Now, this looked like it was going to be the perfect weekend for the Hulk. He did well in qualifying, ending up in 7th place on the grid. Good drive during the race, but then had to retire 13 minutes from the end with engine trouble. Palmer did well and got his first points. Despite that, I don't think Renault are filled with regret for replacing him next season.
Can I just quote a tweet that I, on the Twitter, put out there, which was...
Are you quoting yourself now?
I know, I'm terrible. I gave this official for Formula One's sake prediction, which was Hülkenberg for a podium, Verstappen has a car failure, and Palmer soils himself. And how close was that to being right?
Because
Verstappen, not very.
Well, Verstappen kind of had a car failure in that it got whacked into by a Vettel. Hülkenberg nearly got a podium because he was up at third for a lot of the race, and I reckon he would have taken Bottas. And I'm definitely sure that Palmer shat himself when they told him he'd finished in the points.
And when did you put that out?
About 1 o'clock.
Oh.
Before the carnage.
Amazing.
So pretty impressive predicting. It was an interesting race for them. I mean, Hülkenberg was up in third at one point.
He
on
was
the race
good.
When he's going to get the unfortunate statistic of most drives without a podium.
Oh.
I think he's equal with Sutil now on most drives. So it would have been particularly sweet if he'd have got a podium on this race, because that would have been one less than Sutil. But he did very well, and the car's looking good. And, you know, like a lot of these teams, like McLaren and Red Bull and whatnot, you know, it's not a high engine dependent track, so they did quite well. Their car's looking all right. And then we've come to Palmer, who it was rumoured this week was offered a large amount of money from Renault to fuck off for the next race.
No.
Was he really?
Yeah, they said they've offered him a generous severance package to finish his contract. Because basically, when... fairly official, it was on Autosport. So this has been the best week for Palmer, because A, he found out he was fired for next year by reading it on the internet. He said he read an Autosport article that said that Carlos Sainz has been signed for Renault next year, so that's how he found out. I didn't even bother to tell him. Then it transpires that Renault would offer him a large severance pay to quit by Malaysia, because they wanted Sainz in as soon as possible, but Palmer's got a very tight contract, because almost like you could tell he knew the situation was going to come up at some point. And so they basically said to him, here, have this money, we really want you to fuck off. No, please fuck off. Take the money, take back the candles, I don't know. And he said no, and then he's gone on and scored points. So you've got to think there's some justification for him, but at the same time, what must the atmosphere be like? I'd love to know. Are there any Renault engineers listening, and you want to phone in? We'll disguise your. We'll do like a Gerry Adams in the 80s thing. We'll replace your voice with an actor. No one will know it's you. But if you can tell us what's it like there, are his side of the garage getting behind him because they're just like, oh, it's unfair he's been fired, or when they walk in, do they just blank him? Do they go like, hey, I want a cup of tea, and then go around everyone except for Jocelyn, and just kind of go, oh, sorry. I didn't think you wanted one, mate.
Okay, Toro Rosso. That was Sainz's best career result. Boom shakalaka, he sings with two fingers up at Toro Rosso as he skips off to Renault. And Toro Rosso had better hang on to this moment, because they'll be having Honda engines next year. Do you think they regret giving away Sainz?
Yes and no. I mean, they've got a lot of money coming from Honda, and they're going to restructure and become a new team, I think.
They've got some more promising young drivers in there in the Red Bull Driver Academy, whatever it is,
that too,
lineup thing as well. So it's not like he's irreplaceable, good as he is.
And cleverly, Red Bull have apparently got him on elastic, so they've let him go to Renault. But they've also said, well, if we want you back, you're ours, son. It's almost like a gangster, kind of like, you know, you owe me a favour, and I might never call it in, but when I do, you better bloody grace for me, son.
And what about Kvyat? Has he got a seat next year?
Who? Apparently
he has. Driver of the year 2016.
Apparently he has been signed for next year, I think, which seems bizarre. But then again, maybe they need the torpedo power. By Toro Rosso.
By Toro Rosso.
But apparently they need something to laugh at with Honda in the car. It's just like, oh, it's going to be a joke. But there's something great about the idea that Renault has had this amazing thing. Palmer's finished sixth, and his replacement has finished ahead of him in arguably a shitter car.
McLaren. Now, Alonso said that if he hadn't got thrown in the air by Ferrari, then he would almost definitely have got a podium. Weird things happen that race, Alonso, but not that weird. Van Dorn had his hand in the candle, though, which worked because they got the best ever result for McLaren. Do you think 2018 Van Dorn with a not shit engine could be the turning point for McLaren?
I think we'll definitely see both of those drivers on the podium next year, is my prediction at some point.
Oh.
Podium by...
Which race do you think?
I'm going to say Barcelona, Phil.
pick one out of thin air.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't think Alonso would have got a podium at this race, even if he'd have expertly got himself into... Would have been second if he hadn't have been swanged. Mm. But I think he was on point track for a good finish. Would have been like fifth, I reckon. But let's give some prop. This McLaren has not had much chance to say good things about it this year. But the fact it went on for like a good five laps whilst missing half of it.
That was impressive.
To the point, I just think they were like, oh, we haven't got any data from the car because half the car's missing. And I think that's what's holding you back, McLaren. Stop looking at the data. The data's saying you've got to believe.
What a start by Alonso as well.
It was amazing.
Yeah, he was very
he's good,
good,
isn't he? I think give him a chance.
He's always been good.
Give him a chance. He could win.
It's so frustrating when you get these flashes of just how good he is.
Yeah.
When he's not, you know, just moaning or the car's exploding or whatever. He's so good. And it's just he's just wasted the last 10 years.
Pretty much.
It is now time for the standings with Terry Saunders.
Aerotopical. This week, we've mentioned it a couple of times, but Lewis Hamilton has announced he's a vegan. So in one last round of meat-based drivers, here's what you could have won. In first place in the championship is Lewis Hamilton, obvious one.
Nice.
Next one is Sebastian Petter, the people against animal cruelty, whatever it stands for. Third place is Valtteri Biltong with 212 points. Fourth place, Daniel Ribaicardo. This is not one of my strong ones, everyone. You can go and make a cup of tea now. Fifth place, kimchi with red meat and in sixth place, veal. That's Max Verstappen. He's very young. Seventh place, Sergio Pelagato, which is a Mexican specialty I found out today on Wikipedia. Eighth place, with 56 points, is Esther Hamon Rye. Ocon Rye. Ninth place, Carlos Sainsbury's finest sausages. 10th, Nico bulked with water, which is what they do with chicken. They put water in it to bulk it up. 11th place is mutton. That's Felipe Massa. And in 12th is maple veal, which is a Canadian thing. 13th, it's we've not heard this joke for a long time. It's Romain Goujon. And in 14th is Kevin Steam Testicles. Suck those. And 15th place is Gone Off Fillet Steak. That's Fernando Alonso. That, can you just imagine finding a beautiful fillet steak in the fridge and having mould on it? And in 16th is Jocelyn Roadkill, because I don't know why either. 17th place, Stoffel Roffel with rice. Didn't even try. 18th is Sexy Meat. That sounds wrong. And 19th is Daniel Scraped Off the Side of the Road Kvyat. Which is the same as Roadkill, I see in hindsight. Okay, but don't worry, I'll bring that back with the constructors. Now, I've got another musical one this week, so but it's a very complicated song, and I need the backing track. So we're all dancing, it's the intro. Haven't thought this through. So this is obviously a night race, so I've got night fever, and actually a bit like The Wizard of Oz with Pink Floyd, the lyrics match up almost perfect. We'll start it quick. Listen to the ground. There's music all around. There is something going down, and I can feel it. And that's about Mercedes, because they know something's happening, because they're in, you know, the Ferrari's going to crash. Oh, it's exciting. I'm talking over the next verse because I'm waiting for the Ferrari bit, which is now. Oh, that sweet city woman, she goes through the night, controlling my mind and my soul. That's about Vettel controlling Kimi, because he's there. And the feeling is right, Red Bull. Then I get that night fever. We know how to do it. That's because they were going to be the winners in this race. They ruled practice. Night fever. We know how to show. Matt and Chica are looking at me very weirdly. Force India, here I am, praying for this moment to last. Because they've come, they've done a good year, but it might not happen again. Oh, this is bad. At the chorus. Night. Oh, I'm too early. Fever the night. Night fever. This is about anyone now. I'm just filling over the chorus. Oh, God. This is going to come back and haunt me, isn't it? Night fever. Night fever. We know how to show it. Okay. Williams. In the heat of our love. Don't need a help for us to make it. Give me just enough to take us to the morning. They just want to finish the race. They haven't got a chance. And then I'm glowing in the dark. I give you a warning. That's Toro Rosso because they're under the lights. Renault, that sweet city woman. That's Palmer. She moves through the night, controlling my mind and my soul. Haas, when you reach out for me. And the feeling is right, summer balls, then I get the night fever. Oh, skip, go forward 10 seconds. Do it. McLaren, here I am, praying for this moment to last. That's when he came, before he got crashed out, Alonso. And then, but making it my, she's so fine, Wehrlein and Sauber is really sexy. Repeat till fade.
How did that sound in your, from your perspective?
Pretty fucking amazing.
Well, I can tell you, without the music, it sounded shit.
Wow. Yeah, but, I mean, we might have some listeners left if they've kind of left the podcast playing while they went to sleep.
I think this singing bit is. I just think we're cutting at least half our listeners every time you start singing.
Wow. I think Jennifer Wappenkamp might have been right.
Okay.
So thank you everyone that has been playing the Fantasy League. We will be doing a full report on the teams later in the season. But for now, let's return to Terry with the state of F1.
Let's just imagine this scenario for a second. Terry, sit down for a second. I've got something to tell you. Mummy and Daddy are going to stop fighting and they've decided to separate. Don't cry. I know this is confusing. What does that mean? Well, I'm going to rent a flat with your Uncle Toro and your mum has Renault moving in, and you'll have to call him Papa from now on. So the divorce is official. Honda have been ditched, and at last McLaren can be a lower midfield team again. Hooray! I've seen again and again on forums that McLaren have gone down in my estimation, and they should have stuck it out with Honda and wait until the engine comes good next year and Toro Rosso beats them. I don't have a crystal ball, but I do have a fair idea that next year McLaren will be ahead of Toro Rosso. Why? Because Honda, not just in this stint as an engine supplier, but in their disastrous tenure with BAR, then on their own until 2008, were just terrible. A little known fact, but Honda literally translates as writing checks that we do not have sufficient funds for. They overpromise, overbelieve, and underwhelm. Now the gloves are off, they're blaming McLaren, saying that McLaren found it too hard to adapt to change. Like, really, McLaren, you should have accepted being at the back of the grid in DNFs and stopped bloody moaning about it. But let's make no mistake, McLaren are fucked. The idea that next year they can win a championship with a Honda or a Renault is laughable. They've been losing money hand over fist, and at the minute they are heading on a slow downward slide to oblivion that once unthinkable befell the likes of Tyrrell, Lotus and the other great of F1, Acela. There are now new engine regs for 2021, and that's the horizon that McLaren are eyeing. Fuck Alonso, he hasn't got a hope of winning another championship. Instead, it's just about limping to the time where a simpler engine formula can bring a new manufacturer, or maybe they can build their own. But don't worry, I have a solution of what McLaren can do in the meantime. Like great BBC institutions, have I got news for you and never mind the Buzzcocks, I propose a rotating series of faces of McLaren. Not drivers, but racing series. Let's take a few years off Formula 1 until the new engine regs, and instead they do a season in Indy, they do a Formula E car, they do a Le Mans, and they do some tin-top racing, get the brand back, everyone will be like, oh, McLaren are amazing, and then they'll come back to Formula 1 with a bang when it's cheap and easy. That's my solution. Just sack off the next couple of years.
I'm sure the R&D department are delighted to hear that idea.
Well, what I say carries a lot of weight.
But if they come back stronger than ever, it was worth it.
Yeah, sometimes you need a break.
It's certainly worth a go. Give Zach Brown a ring.
It worked for Alain Prost.
It's the whole problem with not being a front running team generally, isn't it? It's not just a McLaren problem. It's like it's all these teams that have never won anything and never likely to win anything. What keeps them going? And I've no idea, frankly.
True, but McLaren, they've done so well in the past. It's just sad. It's like Williams. It's just a bit embarrassing.
It's true.
So I say euthanasia.
That is it from us. It is goodbye to Phil Tromans.
Goodbye. We haven't had time to talk about yet another Formula One film that's coming along, this time about Ferrari. And there's a documentary about how Ferrari got good at the cars.
Apparently
that's coming out in November, so that should be quite fun.
Apparently it's an interactive film. If you're watching the film and don't agree with it, they have a veto right to kick you out the cinema.
And it's goodbye to Terry Saunders.
We haven't talked about it. I mean, I mean to mention this in the last few weeks. There's an amazing ad campaign with Lewis Hamilton for L'Oreal Men on bus stops. You're all aware of the phrase, sun's out, guns out. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of this? Which means when it's sunny, you get your arm muscles out, I believe. They've gone with the catchphrase, the tagline, sun's out, tats out.
Oh.
Which, well, that doesn't work.
Which I just want to say to the advertising people in charge of this, the reason Suns Out Guns Out works is it rhymes. Suns Out Tats Out does not work. It doesn't scan. It's stupid. You're making Lewis Hamilton look stupid, which, as we discussed, is something he can do on his own. Thank you very much.
We'll be back in 2 weeks' time to discuss the Malaysian Grand Prix. But in the meantime, check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/ForF1Sake, and follow us on Twitter @ForF1Sake. Hey, Alexa! Play every episode of For F1's Sake.
Buy a t-shirt, ff1s.com/shop. Which is embarrassing now because there's a Noel Edmonds program, cheap, cheap, cheap. So I might have to change that URL because I don't want people to think I'm inspired.
Change to shop, shop.
I might change to shop.
How about shop, 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 shop?
Brilliant. That's the new URL.
Thanks for listening. I've been G. Grez. Goodbye.
Bye.
Podcast Network.